Struggling to move your nonprofit forward? You've come to the right place. Welcome to the Nonprofit Architect, where we are giving you the actionable steps you need to launch and grow your nonprofit organization. Now, here's your host, Travis Johnson.
Hey, welcome back to the show, and welcome back, DD Kiso, to the program. We had you on last year. We're bringing you back again. You just wrote a new book, Fundraising in the Post-Pandemic World. How the heck are you doing, Dee Dee?
Well, thanks for asking, Travis. I'm great because you're great. So thanks for asking. You're that good.
So what everyone doesn't get to see or hear is I always have like a pre-discussion with my guests. And we're working through a couple of things from the beginning of the year for us. And I asked if she wanted to be vulnerable. And Dee Dee's like, nope, not interested. And I don't blame her. Like, being vulnerable in a public setting is tough. It's hard. It's actually, someone told me it's one of my superpowers, because I am more than happy to share about all the things that go on in my life and in my world, because I really feel people need to see that side of me. If you only see what, you know, is public facing, we just think everyone's amazing all the time. And that's just not how life works. It's just not true. So I told her a little story to encourage her. Now she's all excited and revved up and raring to go. But Dee Dee, please tell us what you've been up to the last year or so. I know you've got this book out. What else has been going on?
Well, thanks for asking, Travis. And I'm really excited to be back. So thank you. You know, what's been going on was we finished up my back and forth in-home galas. We went into studio, 3 live cameras. We did some galas. But, you know, when those masks came off, people wanted to get back and be live again. So we're continuing to do donor enrollment and coaching with my clients to raise money in that way. But I have really been wanting to get this book out. It is Fundraising in the Post-Pandemic World. What has changed? You know, in the last 2 years, if you don't change how you raise money, certainly has. And you're going to be left in the dust if you don't change your thinking a little bit. You know, I approached that a little bit after writing the book. I had a little imposter syndrome, and it was like, what's next? I had some sad days. And it took me back to when I worked back as a major gift officer in a nonprofit. And I came in every day all gung-ho, and we're going to recruit and find those lapsed donors. And I had amazing success. But the people I worked with weren't the people exactly high-fiving me every day. And there were days that, and this reminded me much of that, Travis, is going into my car and crying through my lunch, because it was so hard to bring other people along with me and to feel the joy and to change the way we were raising money, make it joyful giving and not mediocrity. And, you know, there were 2 people in that company that had other day jobs, and the company didn't even know. You know, are you bringing your best? And can you stop for a moment and be grateful? And so, you know, I found at that point that I probably wasn't grateful enough. I was wanting to do more and prove more and enroll more and raise more. It wore me out. And so there's a bit of this book called The Six-Figure Mindset. And I want everyone to know that using that chart every day when you get up, it can turn where you go. It can, you know, why do you wake up in the morning? Can it help you wake up? And that's with an intentional awakeness, intentional mindset, and some gratitude on all those accomplishments.
Oh, absolutely. And thank you so much for being open and vulnerable with us. It's interesting that when we have feelings, we people have feelings. I was shocked to find out in my 20s that there was more than one feeling. I didn't know there was more than one. I thought anger was the only feeling you could have. And I've slowly learned that there's many more different feelings. But people experience the full range of feelings on a fairly regular cycle. I'm one that struggles with seasonal affective disorder. So when it gets cold and dark and all that stuff, I get cold and dark. And it's not till the spring that everything starts greening up again that I get really excited. And then I overload my schedule and I realize I can't do all this stuff and I have to say no to a bunch of stuff, which I just did this week. But that cycle affects everybody. And when we do things and we go through life, and especially being in America, it's more, bigger, better, faster, you know, more money, more donors. How can we help? How can we build the biggest nonprofit ever of all time? We forget that the things that we do day to day can have a big impact regardless of the size of them. Oh, my gala didn't raise as much as last year. Yeah, but you were able to serve more people. You had a larger impact. You changed the life for this person, for this person, for this person. This person now is forever changed because of the impact that you had on your life. And what we tend not to do, especially in America, is we tend not to celebrate all the little things that we've done along the way because we're looking to the future for the next mountain to climb, or it wasn't the same or as big as or as cool as what you did last year or what you saw on TikTok or whatever the thing was. So we don't celebrate. We stay overly busy. And then we also compare what we just did to how everyone else did. Like there's some magical scorecard out there, and that can keep us and prevent us from doing the things that we need to do, living that gratitude filled life and just being. We're human beings. We're not human doings. So I wanted to thank you for not only your transparency, for being my guest again, and also completing your book, Fundraising in a Post-Pandemic World. If you're hearing this for the first time and you've not met Dee Dee before, go back in the podcast and check out Six-Figure Fundraising Framework with Dee Dee Kiso so you can see how she does all the amazing stuff that she does. And then you can check out her new book, Fundraising in a Post-Pandemic World, to figure out how it's changed, tweaked, and updated since nonprofits have been doing everything the same way for 30 years. It's changed now. And if you don't get up on the times, your nonprofit will be left in the dust, like Dee Dee said. Dee Dee, what inspired you to really write the book and put this together?
Well, I'll tell you what. I have a business coach and I love him. And I'll tell you one other thing is I didn't realize all those years of fundraising, you know, you go to a conference, you go to your local nonprofit group, collaborators, but these are all people on your same level. And whose shoulders can you stand on to take a leap and do things differently and to think differently? And so I had a coach, I've had mentors, I pay for a business coach. I invest, and I'm investing in myself now, my future, and I'm also investing in being the best coach and mentor for other people. So we're not just keeping the thinking in the nonprofit world. This is for-profit thinking as well. Iron sharpens iron. And when you can align yourself with somebody who thinks differently and they can elevate you. And in the book, I talk about several different for-profit entities that inspired us to be able to leap forward and jump, raise more money without the same old processes. I have a chart in there called From Chicken Little to Paul Revere. And this is just purely mindset, right? Most nonprofits were apathy, arrogant, a little bit dishonest with ourselves. There's ego. There's fear about asking for money. There's hopelessness, shame, stress. Any of those things, that's Chicken Little. You know, no one's really shooting at you. It's not a battlefield when you open the door at your nonprofit. It's really, you should be thinking like you're Paul Revere. And there's some awfully good news. There's some transformations that happen in your organization. And you got to get out in the public square and tell other people so they can come be part of it too. And it means being brave. It means being calm, confident, delighting in the work. You need to be enlightened and excited, which is the opposite of this Chicken Little mindset. And I know because I have worked with hundreds of organizations. And the first thing we need to do is like, Chicken Little has left the building. And I want you to like put on some armor. And I mean, how can you not talk about your nonprofit like you're Paul Revere and you have good news to share? And you know what? The British aren't really coming. You're just going out and letting people know your good news. I think that thinking is step one. And we need to be reminded every single day when we wake up, like, I'm not going to be Chicken Little. Not today.
That's so true, right? There's a lot of nonprofits out there that do this fear-based, guilt-based, shame-based fundraising. There's always some kind of emergency, like, oh, we've got to get the funding for the new thing by the end of the quarter or else the sky will fall on us. And everyone I know in those organizations that run the fear-based, the scarcity-based, the oh, woe is me-based with the tin cup, those people are not enjoying life. They are worried about where the dollars are going to come from each and every month. They're flying by the seat of their pants. I know they're not spending time training. I know they're not spending time building teams. Everything seems to be an emergency in these organizations. And the other thing they have in common is they don't last. They might have a good year and a half, 2 year push. They might even stretch it to 5 years, but you don't see those organizations hit the 10 year, 15 year, 20 year mark. You don't see them hit the $1 million mark. They never do because people don't like those feelings. They don't like being talked to that way. They don't like the framework of the guilt and shame. You might get their dollars today, but you might not get their dollars next year. And that brings us to the lifetime value of a donor, because you don't care about their money just today. Yes, it's nice to get today, but I want to know, is that money going to be there next month, next quarter, next year? Or are they going to leave a gift to us in their will? How do you approach the question of lifetime donor value?
I'm so glad you asked. Well, you know, I am kind of pro-event. And I like events. I don't like galas that cost thousands of dollars. I don't even like the word gala because it means party. But how about a donor enrollment event? We're going to bring people in to three things. Educate them on the transformation that you provide. They won't want to know all the hows that you do everything, but who is being transformed? Are their lives changing? And are these lives going to create a ripple effect for future generations? So that's your story, right? We're not storytellers. I see a lot of storytelling and it's A to Z and we're all done, but no, it's enrollment, right? So we want to enroll people in this transformation. And one thing about having an enrollment event, it's permission to have sponsors, underwriters, your friends all come, friends tell friends, and all together now, we're going to invite you to give a joyful gift. And the lifetime donor value, I have a chart in my book that talks about the frequency of the gift, the level of the gift, and the duration of the gift. And so it's a Venn diagram. So just imagine frequency, you don't want it just once a year. That means you've only contacted them when you're having an event. Oh, I better call, thank them for coming last year and invite them to next year's event. I heard this twice this year already. And I said, oh, heavens, I hope that's not really the case. Then the level, right? You want to be able to give people, you know, that first gift is a test gift. I remember we talked about in our last podcast about the buffet, the all-you-can-eat buffet. But that first gift very well could just be a test gift. And if you have a frequency of gratitude, you're going to have a frequency of gifts and opportunities for them to give a greater level. And you know what? There is no duration. No duration without a donor gratitude program. And that doesn't mean like, you know, press the button, this email, pick up the phone. It's like, you know, we're so grateful. What inspired you to give such a generous gift? Or we notice you've been giving several years. Is there something in particular we do that you can align with? And how can we make sure we're keeping you informed there? I used to have a gentleman, I got to know this lapsed donor very well. And he had given tens and tens of thousands of dollars to the organization. He was lapsed and like, oh, he used to give, he doesn't give anymore. He just picked up the phone. And I said, you know what? We're having an event and, you know, I'd like to buy your ticket. I want you to come and see exactly what it is we're doing. He loved it. Every single time I saw this guy, he handed me a check. And it was always the same amount of money. I never even had to ask. And so once we went to a luncheon together, he invited me and he told me the story on why it meant so much for him to be able to give to our organization. And he was giving to mothers and children. He was a child in that situation once, and he wanted to make sure that didn't happen again. So come year end, I would just call and I'd read a laundry list of ways that are any of these a hot button for you. This is what we're looking for. If not you, do you know anybody else? And I remember one of the last things he did was 75 new mattresses delivered the next day to the shelter, toys for every child and a Christmas gift for every mother. And he had his own daughter and her friends wrap those gifts so he could teach them. So you see, this was a lapsed call, just a phone call. And we were able to bring him back in frequency, levels I had never imagined. And that duration is continuing. And you can go back and look at all those gifts for a lifetime donor value. You know, I still run into him across town. You know, a splendid human being, not a splendid ATM machine, right?
Yeah, it sounded like he laughed because he was missing one of these three ingredients. He didn't feel heard, understood, or acknowledged. And when he finally did feel heard, understood, and acknowledged, he reignited his passion for why he started giving in the first place. You know, when I talk to people in the fundraising world, I don't think anyone is quite as joyful as you are when it comes to putting on events, raising money. And you talked about joyful giving. What is it about what you do that has you at this elevated mood, this joy that no one else seems to have?
Thanks, Travis, for asking this question. That's a good one. And you know, I want to speak to everybody in the nonprofit world because I know there are those dark cloud days and it's because you're doing it wrong. And I used to do it that way too. But when I found what joyful giving really was, and that is just inviting my donors to hear not a boring story and not a long speech, but hear about the work we do to transform humanity. In my book, there's quite a few examples on how to change what it is, the words you use to talk about what you do. And when you start loving the transformation that you provide for individuals, you can joyfully welcome people to make a gift. You're not chasing them for the money. Even in a crowd, if I'm asking my own crowd, let's talk about the transformation that we've all seen for David. I want to invite you all for the future Davids and all the other individuals in our organization that we serve. I'd like to invite you to make a joyful gift at the $5,000 level. And, you know, you can raise your hand or, you know, write a check. And, you know, if $2,500 is a level that would bring you joy for the partnership that and with us to do what we do, you see, we're not telling them we want your money. We're inviting them to use their love and joy and create a gift that brings them joy to give. And, you know, I say it like this, it's a disservice not to allow interested donors to make a gift that can bring them joy and you prosperity. What a disservice that you would run around and not invite them to hear about you, Paul Revere, and make a joyful gift.
Oh, without a doubt.
No, people will say no, and it's okay. It doesn't make me unjoyful when they say no. I'm like, oh, thank you for listening. And I just hope you find a perfect match, an organization that can touch your heart. And thanks for listening. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Right, because they didn't give a gift. We want the right people, because when you look at that LTDV, the Lifetime Donor Value Chart, there's this one little place in the middle where all three come together. Frequency, level, and duration will come together for your ideal donor. And this is someone who's all three for a really long time.
Oh, absolutely. When you get the right people to join in with the thing that you're doing, whatever your thing is, right? Everyone's got their own different thing. This isn't a competition between which person's thing is better or worse or needs more. That's not what it's about. When you get the right people involved, because there is a group of people that care about you, your cause, what you're trying to do and how you're trying to do, there is a group of people for everybody. But when you get those right people on board, everything becomes easier. Everything becomes more joyful and everything becomes more abundant. There's a book called U Squared. It's like Y-O-U to the power to U Squared. I think it's by Price Pritchard. There's a story in the book that I feel applies to a lot of nonprofits. It opens the book with, have you ever seen a fly beating his head against the glass window trying to get out? And I think we all have seen that situation, right? And then it asks, like, is there any amount of pressure or force that that fly can apply to get through that window? And anyone that knows how big a fly is and how squishy its body is and how thick a pane of glass is knows that there's no amount of speed or effort that that fly can give to reach his goal through the window. But if he would just turn his attention to the right direction, this might be in the right donor, the right group of people, he would notice that the door is wide open 3 feet from him and can fly effortlessly to his goal through the open door. So I got to ask, how many people do you see in the nonprofit industry that are just banging their head on that glass, wondering why they can't get where they're going?
Travis, I hate to speculate, but you did ask. Honestly, I think 80%. You continue to do it the same way you've always done. There's this chicken little fear, you know, the resistance. I'm challenging everybody to change your way just a few centimeters, a few degrees for different results. You know, I love having a mentor and I love a business coach. And it's someone, just even an advisor, right? Find an advisor for your organization, someone who has the results that you only dream of, and say, here are the three things we're thinking of. And often the things you're thinking of is something you saw somebody else do. And that may not be the right thing for you.
Mm-hmm.
You can make it organic. What are the results you want? And think big results. So you can invite bigger donors and bigger strategic partners to help you get there. The saddest thing ever is when you get through the door and you find $1 million and then you think your work's done. And how often does that happen? I had a client I just adored, and we had the biggest, best, multi six-figure gala. And after that, someone was inspired. They sent them $1 million and they said, we're going to rest all of our fundraising. You know, we have plenty of money and we're all tired. And we're just going to rest it right there. And guess what? They haven't made any money in a couple of years now. And I can't help them. I can't help them because they don't want to think differently. They got comfortable. And, you know, there's a story in the book, too. I worked at an organization where when the big check would come in at the end of the year, they'd ring the bell. We made budget. Oh, my gosh. That's great. Let's keep going. No, we made budget. We made budget. And I saw this happen for 2 years. It's the saddest thing, right? You didn't have that giant goal, that innovation, that how can we serve bigger and better with less if we had a gift like this? Like, imagine you're driving on a road and there's a pothole. And your organization, like, oh, we got to fill the pothole so we can keep driving forward. And if that's the only goals you have for your organization, just keep those potholes filled so we can keep serving. That's not so cool. If you can create an on-ramp, and there's an on-ramp that you can drive up to and land in a different place and serve from there, I think that might be better.
It's so amazing what happens when you can shift your thinking and the framework of what you've been doing just a little bit to get something new. A lot of organizations I saw during the pandemic had the biggest, best, most wonderful fundraising years that they ever had. And there's ones that didn't, and they closed up shop. And the biggest difference between the two was the ones that had all the success kept asking, right? When times are tough, not everyone will be able to give, but the people that really understand and have the capacity to do so are going to give, and they're going to give big, but not if you stop asking. Don't project your fears, your insecurities, what's going on in your own personal household budget. God forbid, I know tons of people had a really hard time through the pandemic, but the ones that kept asking, that shifted, I know that word pivot's been out there, pivot, right? That word's out there, but the ones that did, that took the opportunity as to try something new and different and maybe finally raise their technology in their fundraising and their day-to-day life. Good Lord, some of you nonprofits, you know who I'm talking about. I can just, like, as I'm recording this, I can project in the future and see the collective heads going, yep, our board hasn't had any kind of updates or innovations in decades. The ones that did found that there was a whole other world to connect to, a whole lot easier ways to do this thing. And they could get away from that scarcity. Oh, look at the poor, sick animal. Don't just show the poor, sick animal. Show the transformation. Show the animal that's happy, healthy, in a great home, and looks amazing. And then say it's because of the program. It's because of the gifts, the joyful gifts that everyone in their sphere of influence brings in. Those joyful gifts are what cause the transformation. If you're leading with the dog that's all beat up and sad, your lifetime donor value is going to be much less than if you do it the other way.
And you know what? The story about that sad dog isn't the sad dog. It's the happy family that became its future home, right? So that and its family is really the rest of the story. And I think we forget about where did the joy level go? And that's really what nonprofits do, is they create a joy level. And so go there. You know, even these testimonial stories, like they're really helping me get out of being homeless or helping me with my drug problem. Well, you know, you haven't solved the problem just yet. You have someone still in the process. But your best testimonials come from somebody who says, that was me, they helped me, and today I'm in this different place. I'm not still being helped. I am helping myself as a result of the work this organization did. So often I find they'll put a dreamer or someone that's not quite there yet to be the testimonial story, and the donor is not quite sure if they're going to make it past the finish line, right? So be really selective with how you tell your story and make sure it's someone who's graduated from the program. It makes all the difference.
Absolutely. I know that you are a lover of the event, and I've talked to a lot of different people. There's some event haters out there, and that's okay. You're allowed to be the hater. I'm okay with you being wrong. That's perfectly fine in my book. But you are an event lover, and you talk about in your book how to reverse engineer your event. For those that haven't read the book, give us a little behind the scenes sneak peek of what it looks like to envision that event and then how to reverse engineer all the steps so you can make that event happen for your organization.
Okay, well, I'm going to be honest. I used to be an event hater, okay? but reverse engineering means, number one, starting out with what is the outcome you want? And it had better not just be raising money. That's how you have a failing event, because you've opened up a bank ATM and you're dressing it up like a party and you just really want to suck the money out of everybody. But really, this event needs to do three things. And that is tell the transformation, how you elevate, how many people you've elevated through the years, and get people to hear why you are different. And then number two, you want to enroll them. It's like enrollment, right? So they're becoming people that you can reach out to in the future, and they're going to become believers in your cause. So post-event, you want people, you want humans, you want them to get into the frequency, duration, and level past the event. And of course, you want the event to raise money. And I think a reason a lot of people hate events is that they aren't footsie enough. They haven't reversed engineered now the return on investment portion. And I'll tell you now, so the end of last year, several of the events I did doubled in money. Like it was a $250,000 event. It became a $500,000 event. And people just wrote the fattest checks in the world. And even post-event, they came back. And the reason that event should be thought of like a, think of it as a, you're going to the homecoming, right? It's a high school homecoming. Well, you better tell them it's the homecoming dance and not the homecoming game, right? So game party, use your pre-event marketing to set expectations. And remember, if you're going to a dance, people are going to ask you to dance. So let them know it's a fundraiser. You will be asked to make a joyful gift of some kind. And we know we have numerous people coming. So make sure you have a diversification in the way that they can give and the way they want to give. Also, you don't want so much electronics and technology that you make the donor have to jump through burning hoops to give their gift. A lot of people who give money don't want to give money on their phone in a live event. They don't want to hold up a paddle that has a QR code that someone's going to come around and like swipe a card or get their QR code. That's not joyful. You want to be able to say, thank you so much, Travis, for your gift of $5,000 and have everyone applaud. Travis, keep your arm up. In about 10 minutes, somebody will come by and swipe your credit card. So be careful on the technology you're using. You're wearing out your donors. You're not making it philanthropic. And then here's what's the number one thing that's happening now is my clients are finding alternative places to have their donor enrollment event. And I'm talking, if they're a camp, they're doing it at camp. And we're not having like ball gowns and tuxedos. We're bringing people to the camp to see what's happening. You know, handicapped children are able to see the pool. They're able to see how they're going to learn to do archery. And we're going to have an exhibit in one of my clients. Another one is doing the event in the garden of her own facility. We're saving thousands of dollars. We're just getting some good speakers in so everyone can hear. And we're bringing them to the soil where the transformation happens. And so I think this is a wonderful way to move forward. You're really going to tell your story. People are going to see where some of those shortcomings are, where they could invest, right? Let them leave thinking, gosh, they could really use, another lift over at the swimming pool. And, you know, maybe we could put our name on it. Let's write that check later on. But let them see where they can invest and serve people and bring elevated work to the organizations that they are attending. You know, how can we let them help us elevate?
You see, I love that you say bring them to the place. So many times I see nonprofit websites that you have to like be some kind of detective to figure out what on earth it is that they even do. They're not showing their programs. They're not walking people through the transformations. They're not showcasing their wins. Some organizations deal with things. I talk to a lot of veterans groups that talk about healing and transformation and PTSD and all these different things. And it's hard to get some people in that situation to say yes. But what you can say is you can do a quick Facebook Live and be like, I am so excited because of our family, our donors like you. We were able to onboard this 32-year-old Army veteran and connect him to the services he needs to get healing. Thank you, everyone. How long did that take? 20 seconds? I didn't violate privilege. I didn't tell you who he was. He didn't have to come share his story, but I showed the people what it is that we're doing with the funds that we're giving. And I don't know what it is about nonprofit organizations. They don't have someone dedicated to doing what I just said is so easy to do.
You're absolutely right. It's so easy to do. And can you imagine when you have 90 to 200 people come through at the same time? So now that development director doesn't have to schedule 50 private tours, and they have to meet him for coffee a few more times because you can't ask for money just yet. This is a massive one-to-many asking for money opportunity, and it's all joyful. And the best part is you have high-level givers that are going to come and bring their like-minded people. And sometimes I have like our biggest donor talk about why he loves to give. So we're going to enroll everybody like this, and it's about 30 minutes of asking and having maybe a couple live auction items, but this is not all-night money grab. And it's about joyful giving, joyful transformations, and welcoming everybody all at once. Now, post-event, your work is doing what you should absolutely love to do, and that is thanking these people and keeping them in, you know, keeping in touch with them all year about, you know, your gift made this happen, right? We're so happy that, you know, Billy got his therapy dog, and look how he's doing now. And you give the donors the credit for all of that.
You just brought up a great point of something I remember from the 90s watching TV. If you would give the price of a cup of coffee a day, it'll go to some child in Africa, but then they would send you letters from the kid thanking the donor about what they did. They were closing that loop. I don't know if I agree with how I did all the stuff, but they closed the loop on what the impact the person was making. And so often, so many nonprofits forget to do that. I remember interviewing Brady Josephson from Next After, and he said that less than 15% of all nonprofits thank donors for every transaction. Less than 15%. You want a way to stand out as a nonprofit? Thank your donors for their stinking money and show them with the good that it's done.
You know, one of the best exercises that I love to have clients do is after their donor enrollment event, we split up the list of everybody that came, you know, and it might even be 8 to 10 per board member. And Sunday morning, pick up the phone and just say, thanks for coming. People aren't even going to answer the phone, but they'll listen to the message. And, you know, in that rarity, my biggest naysayer once was this elderly gentleman. I'm not doing that. And so he did it. And we met up because I said, we're going to have a post event. I want to hear how it all went. And he goes, I can't believe they couldn't believe I called to thank them because I'm on the board. And they wanted to tell me what a great time they had. And they hope we do it again because they want to come again. And they love learning about all the things that we do they didn't even know about. Okay, that was a 2-minute phone call. And if you go back to the lifetime donor chart, it's going to really make an impact.
Yeah, absolutely. I love all the things that you're doing. Thank you so much for being open, honest, transparent, sharing about your book and some of the details about the joyful work that you do. Dee Dee, where can people find you?
Well, DeeDeeKiso.com. You know, as a thank you to all of the listeners, the book's going up on Amazon, but you can get a free download of the book by going to my website, DeeDeeKiso.com. Just my gift to you. Download the book, use it, and you know, let me know if it worked for you or if I can provide you with any other, you know, standing on my shoulders. We also are having I've done this before, I'm bringing it back, is my 6-figure fundraising event formula, right? Where we're going to work in group and create your event. And you can ask all the questions you want to how your organization can best utilize the reverse engineering techniques. And it's not necessarily what everybody else is doing. It will be the right choice for you.
Hey, thanks so much for being my guest today, Dee Dee.
Thank you so much for having me.
If you like conversations like this and you were like, Travis, how can I start my own show? Head over to nonprofitarchitect.org/resources. Pick up our ultimate and complete podcast guide. We have helped launch a ton of podcasts that have been able to start fully funded, get monetized, grow the show, and really help get their voice out there. Check it out, nonprofitarchitect.org. Thanks again, and we'll see you again next week.
You've been listening to The Nonprofit Architect. To listen to all our past shows, visit http://nonprofitarchitect.org. And be sure to subscribe, rate, and review our show. Thank you.